The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.
Now, smartphones have completely transformed the lives of everyone, both positively and negatively. And teens today have perhaps been impacted the most. Up-to-date studies on teens and smartphone use suggest a worrying trend, with dangers like cyberbullying, porn addiction and misinformation having huge effects on their well-being. Now, to talk about this and what we might do, if anything is possible to do, we are joined by Dr. Anne Coe and Dr. Richard Hogan. Richard is author of Home is Where the Start Is, and he is a family psychotherapist. And Anne is a chartered member of the Psychological Society of Ireland, herself a senior clinical psychologist. Good morning and welcome to you both.
Good morning.
Now, Richard, we've been talking about this, touching upon it, but we can sort of list the dangers in almost a hierarchy of danger.
Oh, one of the greatest dangers, I think, and I've been saying it for a long time, Pat, and I had a petition to go to government with it, is the easy access of pornography for our children. To me, that's one of the single most important issues here. I can't believe that I'm standing here in 2024 as a parent of three daughters, working with adolescents for over 25 years, working clinically with adolescents, that a child can access hardcore extreme material, to me, without any gateway to stop them. I find myself flabbergasted saying that there's nothing there. There's no preventative measure there. I worked in school last year where a principal told me, Pat, that a senior infant had consumed hardcore extreme material.
And is there any jurisdiction where this can't happen? Any government actually come to terms with this?
England was trying to roll it up, but they didn't actually bring it in the end. I don't know of anyone yet who has done this properly. And that's why I think as a country, we should be at the forefront of this. We should be able to bring in legislation here to prevent this from happening. We need robust legislation.
Anne?
I think it's a huge issue. I mean, if you look at the surveys done on young people, so say for fourth, fifth and sixth year young people, there is high levels of having seen something in the last month. About 80% of young males have seen something in the last month. But I guess it's not a brand new problem. I mean, there was the kind of idea of the Playboy behind the bike shed and it was passed around. So seeing things that we don't want our
but
kids
to
see.
But we look at that as relatively harmless now. Mm-hmm. And Playboy, I believe,
harmless.
Has been relaunched.
But again, like what Anne said there, Playboy isn't, like, that's not the issue here. I'm not a prude. I'm not harking back to a puritanical time. I'm talking about hardcore, extreme material of having consent taken. You know, currently in our society, we live in quite a blended society. And currently, pornography is about stepdads, stepsisters, stepmothers, stepbrothers. Imagine if you're eight, Pat, and you're living in a blended family and you watch pornography and it's telling you that perhaps your father or your stepmother there should be someone you should be sexually interested in. That is, I mean, the IWF, the International Internet Watch Fund, their foundation, found that out of 275 images, 92 were self-generated that were of a sexual interest, sexual content. That means our children are being sexualized, and they were looking at between 8 and 10 years of age. That means our children are being sexualized very early. That's the early sexualization of our children.
Yeah, and you point the finger firmly at the smartphone, because you still don't get in news agents kind of printed pornography of any.
But imagine when you were a child, Pat, I grew up in Cork, going down to the local shop and asking Seamus for Playboy. You'd never do it because he'd see your father later on that day. You'd never do it. But now this is the problem, because I'm working in schools. The smartphone is in the school, it's in the classroom, it's in the toilet. They're watching and consuming hardcore. See, this is what I'm trying to get out to people. This isn't pornography of old. This isn't Playboy. This isn't Channel 18 that we grew up with. This isn't Eurotrash. This is hardcore, extreme material that disturbs, that warps. And in my experience working with this and working with families, no one's talking about this, but it's ripping families apart because people are getting stuck into it. It's addictive, and it's destroying couples, and it's destroying intimacy. And I sit with teenage girls who tell me what the boy asked for in the relationship, and they're only 14 or 15. I'm thinking, you could only come to that. How could a 14-year-old boy ask for that as a normal kind of part of, like, sexual curiosity, only for hardcore material?
Anne, are you coming across this?
I mean, it is happening, and it's very worrying. And I think we have to talk with young people. So rather than making it something that they just, like, it's too late to take the phones off them. No one is going to literally go home and whip the phones away and give up their own phone. But we actually have to have a culture that allows kids to talk about something they see online that is uncomfortable. Because you're right, Richard, the first time someone sees that kind of content when they're very young, it is very uncomfortable.
Mm, the end of innocence.
But we don't let them bring that forward. So we have to have relationships that are strong enough with our kids where they can say, what is that? Or why am I curious about that? Because everyone is curious about something new they find online. So it's not to demonize the child. It's not to demonize the child who shows the child even. It's that we have a massive societal issue on this. And that we as parents are responsible for supervision of kids, for looking at what the blocks and we have up on their phones and for letting them talk about what they do see.
Exactly.
When it happens.
You're right, Anne. Adolescence is all about adventure. It's all about curiosity and it's about taking risk. That's adolescence. But it's what they're satiating that curiosity.
Yeah, I'm wondering downstream that the problems that these kids may develop in later life. I mean, trying to have intimate relationships that don't in any way mimic what the extreme stuff they're seeing on their phones.
It is. That's why I'm saying it is so deleterious to a healthy, nurturing relationship. Intimacy is such an important part of a relationship. You know, and if that's been disturbed very early on with ideas about what intimacy is, I see it as a couple's therapist. It destroys intimacy. And once that's gone, you know, I mean, I've had so many conversations with women particularly who are saying to me, the husband was out in the car, stuck in his pornography. He's up in his bedroom, stuck in his pornography. And the husband would talk to me about, I'm stuck in this, I can't get out of it. Because it impacts on dopamine. And dopamine is that like anticipation reward center. But also dopamine programs memory. And so you go back to where you got satiated from and it drives you into isolation.
And does it lead to impotence in males?
It can. No, absolutely it can. It absolutely can lead to impotence in men. The whole idea of the performance and what's expected of you. And that's why what Anne is saying about, you know, educating children there to understand that isn't real. That's not real life. That's not intimacy. That's acting. And in some ways, and sometimes, you know, that's actually, you know, it feeds the sex trafficking industry.
Now, the question of misogyny resulting from pornography, I mean, and the kids feed on stuff they find and these hard men and misogynistic men that are allegedly role models inexplicably, but They seem to admire the guy who gets the girl and gets the girl to do things.
It sort of shows a very simplistic solution to complex relationship dynamics. So, but kids also look to their parents and everyone else around them in their lives. And Richard is right. When you have kids who are lost in maybe an addictive smartphone behavior or overuse, problematic smartphone behavior, who lose track of real life and the adults in their real lives, that becomes their normal. But we have to take that back to comparing what you might catch online, as you say, Pat, the more misogynistic behaviour with how are things in your actual house? Like, is, you know, can they see good gender balance in their house? Can they see good behaviour? The reason it's interesting is because it kind of, if you wanted to feel, if say you felt not so good with the opposite sex, and then somehow this solution is presented online, like you're in control, you own the situation, you can dominate, it's not realistic and it provides a simple solution to a complex relationship dynamic. So we have to counteract that. And it's very easy to slip into that online. It just pops up as
But a girl may even encounter that kind of thing in her own brothers.
Yeah, of course.
So she's getting it on two fronts. She's supposed to be looking to the home as the model of the better dynamic rather than what she sees on the phone. But instead, she's seeing her brother maybe behave in exactly the ways that she sees online.
And kids will test things. So they might test something they see online and then reality should check that and say that's not how it works in this house.
Yeah, yeah. I admire your courage and that you think this is going to work. My daughter, this is a text. My daughter, age 17, is withdrawn, unsocial and not physically active. She has TikTok, Snapchat and full smartphone use. My 14-year-old daughter, who's 3 years younger, has no smartphone access. She's physically active, socially active. She's outgoing. There's got to be a correlation between social media and their behaviour.
There is, absolutely. I mean, this is the greatest experiment perpetrated in adolescence that has ever been. There's no doubt about it. And my message to parents is we need to get our hands around this. We need to take back our parental authority. We absolutely do. We shouldn't be positioned outside this. It is difficult for us because we mightn't be digital natives, but we are the parents here and we set the culture in the family. There's no doubt about it, Pat. I mean, all the research, there's a tsunami of research coming in here. The Surgeon General at the start of the summer released a statement. He wouldn't do that unless he sees the data there. This is massively impacting on adolescents and it's destroying their social world. There's no doubt about it. And on top of all of that, then they're being constantly shown this filtered self. Imagine being a teenage girl currently.
Yeah.
This constant fake self.
Yeah, but they fake it themselves, and you wonder when they look at the fake imagery online, and yet they want to put their own best foot forward, why they can't see, well, what I'm actually seeing that I'm trying to model is not real either.
There's a lot of work done in schools on that, really helping people deconstruct the image, and you see lots of celebrities leading the charge, showing real pictures of themselves, which helps young women. I do think that, like, 100% of, what is it, 12 and up have a mobile phone now. So we really need to think about how we're going to help them manage that.
This from Tom. I'm afraid Anne's suggestion of talking to kids is so unrealistic. Very many kids do not live in perfect Brady Bunch families that facilitate mature, responsible conversations. And I mean, even people listening wonder, how the hell do I talk to my 12-year-old about pornography?
If you don't, who else will?
No, but you know, how do you even start that conversation? Because
it is tricky. No, Pat, it is a tricky conversation. I have three daughters myself, and who's nearly 14 now, my eldest child. My wife has those conversations. I don't have that conversation myself, but I would talk to my wife about the content of that conversation. It is tricky. And you're right, Pat. There are many families in this country that are, you know, dysfunctional addiction and struggling, and their hierarchy of needs. There is food and money, and so they're not thinking about technology, and so there's not those conversations going on. And in any family, there could be a child in there with a seed of vulnerability. And if that seed of vulnerability hits pornography, you have the potential for a catastrophic outcome.
Now, the worst thing we used to hear about smartphones originally was the bullying, you know, people. And they were never free of it because they brought the phone to bed even sometimes. So they're being bullied after midnight in their own homes. Mm. And that is still a serious issue. But there's all sorts of other things being thrown at the kids. And even for young female adults, they're being told, abandon your contraception. Yeah. You know, hormones are bad for you.
Eat 300 calories of a diet, the 300 calorie diet fad and TikTok and all this kind of stuff. Imagine eating that for a day. How depleted you would be.
Because the minimum would be about 2,000 calories.
Yeah, exactly. 1,500 or 2,000. Yeah. And they're saying eat 300 calories to get the figure you want. All of these things are really, really dead. I mean, they're so dangerous. And also suicidal ideation. I don't know if you saw the Primetime Investigates. Well, we set up three phones and we looked at what content was coming in. And within moments of looking at one negative video, they were suggesting, you know, my parents will finally realize the damage they've done to me when I'm dead. Now, that is suggesting suicide to a vulnerable child.
I think you're right, Richard, that it's vulnerable kids who are much more vulnerable in this space in general.
Of course, yeah.
But I do think that you made the point that, like, in families who are maybe more compromised, addictions, mental health problems, etc., that's a huge factor in creating that vulnerability. So there's an emphasis on schools and all the other good adults in a young person's life to help them navigate this, because this stuff is coming in and we're not going to be able to take the phones out of their hands unless we take it out of all their hands.
And that's something we should be really thinking about.
Well, they get a great sense of community from it. So, like, if you're the one kid who doesn't have one, it's very tricky.
No, I agree with you. And absolutely. And that's why I think I feel there's a shift coming on. I feel there's a movement. I feel there's a real kind of movement to kind of delay it to 16. I think I don't think anywhere in primary school there should be a smartphone. I think that should be out of everybody's hand.
Is there any research for what the kids themselves are saying about smartphone use? I mean, you'd imagine they're so convenient for, you know, even the proper use of them, like Googling research items for essays and so on.
Snapchat is their bloody lifeline, isn't it, Anne? I mean, that's what they live by. But that's socially connects them. So teenagers would say yes, but also when they get a little bit older and they retrospectively look at it, they say, I wish I didn't have it that early. Because, you know, Anne, it impacts on grey matter, learning, you know, the hippocampus, memory, all of that stuff.
It does add pressure. It also connects. I mean, the equivalent question would be to take WhatsApp off all adults and watch how you get by. And that's, like, we're unlikely to do that. But we actually need to talk to them about, like, what does it mean when someone bullies you online? What does it mean when someone comments on your appearance or someone posts it in the WhatsApp group? And as adults, we're responsible for that too. Mm. What about when someone behaves badly in one of our WhatsApp groups? How do we check that behaviour? Who do we talk to?
Some of the texts. Can these sites not be blocked for access to Ireland, similar to how we can't access BBC or ITV players here on our tellies? Would that not be a way to stop easy access?
Yeah, well, that's what needs to happen. And that comes from the government, really. That comes from legislation. And it's what's silent in this conversation is people like Meta and Snapchat. I mean, they are the people delivering this content. They are the content creators, even though they go out of their way to pretend that they're not creators. They are the creators of this content, and they're making billions and billions of revenue off our children. And we have to hold them accountable, Pat. I mean, that is such an important thing that we say to them, those recommender systems that you're sending your children, you have to turn those off. And we're going to bring in legislation to stop you from sending them for your children.
I'm a community garda, and the issues around phones and social media are by a huge factor the number one topic I'm asked to speak with kids about. Mm. Anytime I mention porn to parents and urge them to speak with their kids about this, it just shows how unwilling parents are to have that discussion. They expect the schools and the gardaí to parent their children. We give them the phones, we pay the bills, we give them unlimited access. We have alcohol in our home, but we wouldn't give them any access to that. And yet we're doing it with phones.
So we need to have the conversations about what will pop up. So you get, if you're going to give your phone, you need to talk through what's likely to happen. You're likely to get comments about your appearance. How will you handle them? You're likely to get an unsolicited picture that you don't want from somebody. It could be somebody young. It could be somebody pretending to be young. And kids need to know what to do then. It's not fair to let them just receive that and have no story on how they should manage that.
And the question then of what spending 5-6 hours on your phone every day besides your schoolwork, what time is left for other activities? For sport, for getting out of the fresh air, meeting people without phones, having a chat. I mean, one of our texters is talking about the kids, teenagers are using Tinder for dating and other apps like that rather than actually going down to the youth club or whatever and having a chat.
Developing their ability to talk to people, to get feedback. I mean, brain regions, regions in the brain are so sensitive at that age for peer reinforcement and for attention and all that stuff. They absolutely crave it. And I guarantee you, Pat, the majority of people listening to this today, if they have teenagers, are thinking, how do I get my teenager out of the bedroom? How do I get them into school? How do I get them off their smartphone? How do I take it out of the bed at nighttime? How do I get them out of their phone because they're so stuck in it? It's not just an Irish problem. This is a global phenomenon that we have to look at. And it's impacting on their development and their maturation. And I think it's delaying normative parts of just interacting with people.
Yeah. Now, we talked before about kids always quote their peers. So-and-so's allowed to do this. Mm. You know, whether originally it was you're 14, you can't go to the disco until you're 15. Now it's so-and-so has a smartphone. Mm. I want a smartphone, et cetera, et cetera. Parents are in a continuous battle over screen time in general, game consoles, TV and phone. It doesn't help that schools are insisting they use a very expensive iPad that is not covered by the school book scheme. Parents could do with some government assistance in banning schools from requiring tablets to be used. Tablets, of course, is an online device as well. I'm a youth worker currently researching peer-to-peer sexual harm in second level. It's absolutely shocking at the level of sexual assault that's happening to our girls in schools by their male peers, and it's so normalised they don't report it as they see it as normal behaviour. It's an epidemic that no one is talking about.
That's absolutely it. That's why I'm saying this for so long. It is an epidemic that no one is talking about, and it's setting up our young boys to be perpetrators, unfortunately, and it's setting up our girls to have this experience to be normalised for them and to think this is just normal adolescent behaviour. It's not, and we have to protect our boys and our girls from this content. Mm-hmm. This is so simple. We have to protect them from it.
And we'll come to what ideas we might have in a moment. This one from a granny, now 64. I have a 14-year-old granddaughter. When speaking about awkward topics about growing up, I used to take them for a drive. Can't escape and they don't have to look you in the eye.
Exactly. A drive is always a great time.
They have to listen to me. There's good advice.
That's very good advice.
Smartphones aren't seen as bad by younger parents. I'm an older parent and I can see the younger parents with their phones attached to their hands. Mm. They don't remember a time without phones.
I think parents are a very good example. We can have ideas around taking them off young people and kids, but then actually be very, very attached to them ourselves. So you have to lead by example. You have to be like, if we're not having conversations and we're texting everybody, we need to show that that's possible. On the granny that's taken the 14-year-old for driving the car is a fantastic place because it's not a very direct eyes-on conversation. Yeah. I'd also argue that a long drive where people are a bit tired, perhaps could be late in the evening. Some young people have a tendency to talk just when it's bedtime, literally, when you're also exhausted, which is hard.
From the match or whatever.
Yeah, whatever it might be. But I do think based up from that caller earlier on who texted in to say that it's hard to have these conversations, it is really hard to have these conversations. They're not topics we want to put in young people's minds, but in argument and in contrast to what's coming at them online, which you're talking about, Richard, we have to. Hmm.
This is a text on that line. I don't want to introduce my child to porn by bringing it up. Is there a guide to speaking to children about this?
Well, honestly, your child is going to consume pornography whether they want to or not. That's the way things are currently, Pat. There's no doubt about it. So you have, depending on the age now,
What is the trigger? I mean, I'll tell you, I've never seen porn pop up on my phone. Never.
Well, it's all over. It's all over Twitter. It's all over.
I mean, what is the prompt that actually starts the algorithm pumping this stuff out?
It will be embedded into things. It's embedded into everything. If you're on TikTok, if you're on Instagram, it's embedded into them. It will pop up. It will pop up if you're, you know, if just you don't have to be trafficking anything negative or dodgy or anything like that. It will be. It's embedded into every aspect.
And it can be sort of more innocent looking, maybe a cartoon or something with a very low cut top or just something more, that's not really
subtle.
Child appropriate, yeah. So it depends. But I think adults need to look at their, you know, what's on their phones and what they're sending around in their WhatsApp groups. Like, what are we actually doing about this in general? But I do think that there is a guide. So CyberSafe Ireland have a guide for parents, and a lot of work is done in schools with them too, around nudging into topics like this.
This is an extraordinary text here from Angie. Aside from pornography, I stopped my 9-year-old grandson watching a very disturbing program on YouTube in my house a few weeks ago. It was animated with excellent graphics, but the violence against women portrayed in it was disgusting. Worse still, it was being laughed at by the adults promoting it. One girl in it had awful injuries inflicted upon her when a man flung a black wheelie bin at her head because he wanted her phone. There was blood forming around her slumped body as she lay on the ground. And this was supposed to be funny? If this is what young kids, particularly boys, are being subjected to, is it any wonder that misogyny is alive and well?
Well, YouTube is the most trafficked platform. And I would say YouTube Kids is a really important thing to get your child, if they're going to be consuming that stuff, that you have that there, because anything can go on there as an ad, or they can see, and I know it myself when we're talking with teenagers, anything can pop up there as an ad, and those kind of videos. You can see, you know, you're just open to, you're trafficking anything that's available online pretty much. And they don't have enough regulators to take down this content. If the Taoiseach here, Pat, I don't know if you saw the story a couple of weeks ago, Simon Harris was trying to get some, you know, hate speech down. If he can't get that down, what chance has Sandra in the local school down there in Cork? You know, what chance has any of us to get stuff done? If the Taoiseach of the country can't get stuff taken down, what chance of us? And that's why we need legislation to come in there and prevent that stuff from happening to our children.
Surely the lack of discipline is a factor in kids' behaviour. We knew our parents, the guards, the teachers were in charge, but today parents want to be friends with their kids. Teachers can't even raise their voices to kids for fear of prosecution. There is no respect for the law.
Well, fundamentally, you're not your child's best friend. You're the parent. And that's what I'm saying about getting parental agency back and parental authority. You don't want an inverted hierarchy in your family where your child is dictating how they navigate phones.
Finally, I should ask you both, I mean, what could and should be done within the capabilities that we can see? I mean, draconian laws, banning things, pushing things underground is not necessarily the solution. But what could we do?
As I said before, talk to your kids. Talk to them. Like, ask them what their worries are. To give the parents a leg up
in doing all the things you recommend. I mean, do rules and regulations enforceable in schools?
Boundaries.
Yeah.
No phone in the bedroom. Very simple. No phone in the bedroom. No phone first thing. No phone at the meal.
Yeah.
Give them little respites during the day and check the phone from time to time, because you will find content on it. You have to do this, Pat, because I can feel people saying, well, that's my child's privacy. Is it at 14? They should have all this privacy? Absolutely not. You need to be in there and looking what's going on.
Yeah. I'm just going down to the park. We might kick a football. So therefore, I need my phone to be able to be contacted.
Yeah.
And you're going down instead to sit with your mates looking at your phones and not playing football.
Mm. Well, looking at what your child is watching, also having time away from your own phone. So it's not one thing to say don't have your phone while you're scrolling away on Instagram yourself.
Absolutely.
But boundaries are very fair. A cut-off time at night, as you say, Richie, you wouldn't exercise before bed, so why are you on your phone so late? And just literally talking to them, because when kids find something, they need somewhere to put that.
On that, I suppose, pessimistic, optimistic note, thank you both very much. Dr. Anne Kyo, a senior clinical psychologist, and Dr. Richard Hogan, author of Home is Where the Start Is, family psychotherapist. Thank you both very much.
The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.